thanks for joining us on this episode of the DinFos Way. We're an educational podcast for military and civilian communicators, produced and developed at the Defense Information School. I'm your host, Jack Rouse. I'm a former Navy and civilian journalist and a current training specialist at DinFos. Today, we are on the road at Washington Nationals Ballpark in Washington, D.C. We're sitting down with Sean Hudson, who is the Director of Community Relations Military Affairs Division for the Nationals. And we're going to have a communication today about the Nationals Comrel effort, the things that they do with the military, and essentially just everything that we can get out of you in the brief amount of time that we have. So, Sean, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, Jack, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
So tell us a little bit about what the Director of Community Relations Military Affairs does every day.
Yeah, so what I tell people is your favorite pro sports team, if they have three military installations within a two-hour drive, that's a lot for them. Due to our unique presence here in D.C., we work with 13 military installations across the DMV, plus those folks over at the Pentagon. Plus, we have programming for folks flying in and out of the rotator at BWI, Baltimore Washington International Airport. So it's a lot. In fact, there's only two of us in Major League Baseball who our entire identity is the military. Myself and then I have a colleague over with the San Diego Padres because of the large Navy presence out there. There's tons of teams who do stuff with the military. The Boston Red Sox have home base is the name of their military programming. But I am one of two when it comes to the military and the Nationals. You know you're going to work with me. The military is all I handle here at Nats Park and for the team.
That's awesome. What causes the Nationals to concentrate so much on the military aspect?
Yeah, so we've got three pillars that we really focus on. Essentially, the idea is that we know we do these three things really well, and the community has a need, essentially, for us to work with these folks. So we emphasize youth baseball. We have 33 team-up leagues, they're called, across D.C., Maryland, and Virginia, where the teams who participate in these leagues, they get replica Nats jerseys. Caps takes a little bit of the expense off of those leagues. We have a focus on K-12 education, so we have Grand Slam schools throughout the area where if they do baseball-themed STEAM activities, we'll send the mascot there every so often. And then with that large military presence, of course, the 13 installations, the high-ranking folks at the Pentagon, we're looking to work with not only service members but their families to kind of fill in some of the gaps where it might be difficult for the DoD to have programs when it comes to like morale, welfare, recreation, things like that. Essentially, we recognize the sacrifice and service that goes into being in the military, and the Nats are happy to provide an environment for those folks that is beneficial to them.
And you're the only organization that does a salute to service for every single game, right?
Yeah, all 81 home games. There's going to be 14 active duty guard reserve, or in some occasions, we work with TAPS, the Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors. After the third inning, we recognize these folks up on the scoreboard. I would offer the classiest kind of military salute there is in Major League Baseball. We give those folks premium tickets behind home base, includes complimentary food and drink, parking as well, which can be a nightmare in D.C., so
yeah,
maybe that's the most beneficial
thing. Yeah, for sure, that's the best part.
But that's kind of just like the surface of what we do here when it comes to our military programs.
And how did you get here?
A long and winding road. So I was former Air Force Public Affairs. The story before that, though, is that the military recruiters would come into my high school and I was playing Candy Crush because I was like, I'm going to go to school, I'm going to graduate in 4 years, I'm going to make $75,000 right off the bat. But there's three things in college: partying, academics, and sleep, and you only get to be good at two of them. And I, an 18-year-old, got to Penn State, looked around, and decided I was going to be good at partying twice, which led to me weighing more than my GPA, which is not very good.
That rings a bell. I also went to Penn State for a year, and I think I chose the same angle.
Yeah, Happy Valley is aptly named. So after, you know, having a not great GPA, I kind of worked some like dead-end jobs here and there, and then decided I need to get out of Spotswood, New Jersey, located in central New Jersey. Air Force recruiter was the closest one to my house. Knew nothing about the military, knocked on the door. I was like, where do you keep the planes? Let's do this. He's like, well, buddy, that's not how this works. Just kind of honestly accidentally found my way into public affairs, but instantly loved it. It's one of those things I'm so thankful for the Air Force. I didn't know I had this passion for like storytelling, community relations. There's so many different kind of silos of public affairs that then translate to the civilian world. And you're really doing like eight jobs when you're active duty public affairs. So I did that, time to go back to Penn State, did my 4 years, got out, graduated with my degree. In between then, got to do some community relations at Intel Corp, the tech company with semiconductors. Then after I graduated, came on as a project hire at Walt Disney Animation Studios.
Wow.
Did some like traditional publicity work for the film Strange World, and then After that, was looking for a change. I'm an East Coast elitist, is what I tell folks. Really wanted to get back to the East Coast. And this opportunity with the Nats opened up. My predecessor was an Air Force spouse. They're PCSing to Hawaii. Kind of the opportunity was there. The job was posted for like 7 months. I was like, sure, I'll throw my hat in, throw my name in the ring, kind of. And for better or for worse, the Nats decided it was me. I'm the self-proclaimed dumbest man in pro baseball. So that's how I manage expectations overall. But that's kind of through a series of butterfly and domino effects ended up here. So,
did your career in public affairs really set you up for a position in Comrel in Major League Sports? Were there parallels between the two?
Yeah, I think so. I was stationed in Germany doing AFN, so there wasn't a ton of Comrel opportunities, but I think overall, some of the like hard skills of being able to like strategically plan and work with external stakeholders, I think there's a lot of value there for like the current active duty public affairs professional. But then also like the soft skills I would offer, you know, talking with folks daily kind of lends itself to you being better in interviews and things like that. I think overall what really helped though was the wide berth of photo, video, radio, strategic talking points, social media. All those things made me kind of a jack of all trades, if you will.
Yeah, and I think that's what's so very helpful about the training at DINFOS is that no matter what service you're in or what branch or what career field of all of our options that you're going into, we set you up for success with those fundamentals, those foundational skills.
Exactly. Whether you stay in 20 years, and if you do that, you'll see how communications change over time, right? Obviously, social media has become like a huge for a lot of Fortune 500 companies. It's their number one touch point. The days of something happens and we write a press release, not so much anymore. Now it's a tweet or a post on X or an Instagram story or post or something on Facebook like that. And the fact that DINFOS recognizes that and kind of keeps up with that, I think is very beneficial.
That was actually going to be my next question. Sort of what does your social media effort look like and how much of your day is spent on that angle?
Yeah, so when it comes to communications here at the Nats, what I will say is I'm always astounded by, I'll go to kind of lean on my Air Force background. We had a program here at the park where we let service members do PT on the field, and I asked someone in the production company, hey, can I get some B-roll? I'm gonna package it together, send it out to the bases so they can see what it looks like. And someone was like, dude, that's my job. Like, I will do that. Like, I'm in production. You don't have to do that. I'm just so used to being that person who handled everything when I was active duty Air Force, that now when I work with communications, so there's two sides of pro sports communications. There's the baseball side. CJ Abrams was tops in the National League after the All-Star break in stolen bases when we moved him to the leadoff spot. It's their job to tell that story of the baseball team that everyone thinks of. And then there's what I call the brand side of communications. So that's more of what we're doing here with the military. We went to Arlington National Cemetery for Black History Month. Maybe you've heard Jimmy Doolittle, very famous Air Force Doolittle raids. He has a seventh cousin, Sean Doolittle, was a relief pitcher on the 2019 World Series team.
Wow.
So we went over for Black History Month. We laid a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, and we went over to Judd Wilson, served in the Army during World War I, came back, played 20 years in the Negro Leagues. He's buried over at Arlington. Wow. We laid a wreath there as well. That's me working with the brand side of communications to kind of get that story out. We got some play on like Fox, ABC, MLB.com for that. And then also some social media posts around Judd Wilson's birthday, which is February 28th. So it's more of me saying, we have like bi-weekly touch points where I'm like, here's everything I'm doing, make me look good. I cannot win hearts and minds if I don't have eyes and ears, and that's where social media and comms comes in, is they're getting me those eyes and ears so that I can win hearts and minds.
When you're talking about your branding effort, you concentrate on it, it's obviously something you think about every day. What is it that you want the public to think about the Nationals? What's the goal of your branding effort?
Essentially, we want to be top of mind when it comes to, specifically for community relations, being a realist. I don't expect people to, when you ask them about the Washington Nationals and the military, I don't expect anyone to name the programs we do. Much more realistically, folks probably go, I know they do a lot with the military. I've seen they do this, they have the service members there after the third inning. Maybe it's, oh, my niece, their Little League jersey is a Nats jersey. I know they do a lot with that. Or my son goes to it's called a Grand Slam school, I think. And I see the mascot there at their STEM nights and stuff like that. Really, we want to solidify the fact that maybe the team is last place in the NL East. Why are you going to bring your family to the park and spend money, hard-earned money, to have an experience here when the team is, what some would say, maybe like underperforming or certainly not competing for a World Series? So kind of being able to fill in those gaps of why do you want to come to Nationals Park is kind of the goal of my branding and efforts there.
You know, it's interesting, as we're talking, it strikes me that a major sports team is one of the only organizations where there's going to be a constant up and down because you're winning and losing every day. Is it, this might be a silly question, but is it easier to do this job when you're winning than it is losing? And how much harder is it when you are losing?
Well, when you're losing, people are more likely to critique than they are to praise, right? Think about the last time you had a great meal at a restaurant and you went on Google, 5-star review, right? No, you're much more likely when the service was a little off, 1-star review, I didn't have a good time. When you're losing, the beer is warm, the hot dogs don't taste good, all those kind of critiques come up. And when the team's winning, it becomes the standard, right? I wouldn't say that fans take it for granted. The fans set the standard that we have to meet. But I would say that community relations is more important when the team's not performing, because then we give folks a reason to come to the park that maybe is other than the final box score.
Do you work with the media as well and do any kind of media relations with ESPN and those larger folks? And if so, tell me what that's about.
Yeah, so that's the communications team, once again, kind of the fact that we have folks that handle that. They do everything from when we go over to Arlington National Cemetery, putting out some B-roll, just an overall like media kit, media blitz. They'll work with, something we're working on is getting some military influencers. Never thought I would say that term out loud, but getting some military influencers here to do a base hit workout on the field. We want to like mic them up, put a GoPro on them, kind of show that perspective, things like that. So that is, once again, the best thing I can do is paint a complete picture for our communications team, kind of that interdepartment synergy, right? And that relates some ways back to the military. If you're an E3 who just got into public affairs, you probably don't know what every job does in the military, in your branch, on your installation. But helping paint that picture, I think, helps our communications team be better storytellers.
No, I agree. You know, your storytelling effort is created through video, it's created through photos, it's created through your social media posts, it's created through everything you do. And it seems like, from what you're telling me, you have a very large team of people that are all doing this every day. So it's not just a small effort. This is a very large effort with some very specialized people all contributing towards the goal.
It's a large effort. What I will say is folks take on an incredible amount of work, not just for the Nats, but pro baseball, pro sports overall. We have folks that, I look at the backgrounds of, some folks came here from working like the Pyeongchang Olympic. They were on the U.S. Olympic Committee, and now they're on our comms team. Folks are able to take on this really heavy workload, and their bandwidth is like incredible. So I always say that kind of the dumbest guy in pro baseball, self-proclaimed, it's mostly because everyone here seems so talented. Everyone has such robust backgrounds that the imposter syndrome sits in sometimes. But overall, the effort is certainly not by accident, right? It's something that we work very hard on to make sure folks know, not just the fact that, hey, 81 times a year here at Nats Park, we play a pro baseball game, hopefully more on a good year. We have a few more games here. But there's also other things. We're in the community. We're where you folks exist. The Nats are making efforts, trying to make strides to better the folks who are coming to Nats games.
How important is feedback to what you do, and where do you guys go to get your feedback?
Yeah, local community members, obviously, it's very important. You don't want to be like the one-way communication channel where,
sure,
or existing in an echo chamber where everything we do is great. Stakeholders is the number one place we go. How are we doing, essentially? Not only do you see those signs up around the park, you know, scan this QR code, leave us a review, but also when we go to a military installation and host a youth baseball clinic there, we make sure that we're soliciting feedback from those folks. Good, bad, if you come to Nats Park, was the bathroom dirty? We want to know about it. Was the security staff really friendly? We want to know about it. Essentially, it's making sure you ask. It would be very easy for us to host an event here at Nats Park for the military. We get 200 service members. It looks good, right? Everyone's in their uniforms. And then, you know, we go, "Whoop, job well done. Let's move on to the next one." But soliciting that feedback from those stakeholders is the easiest way to build on what works well, but also improve some things where maybe we're lacking a little bit.
Tell me some more about the events that you guys do for service members here.
It's a laundry list of activities. So we are here in the Eisenhower Conference Room as we film this. This is one of 5 conference centers we have here at the park. They host anywhere from 20 to 200 members. What we do is we encourage anywhere from squadron commanders all the way up to the wing or folks at the Pentagon. You do strategic planning, come to Nats Park and do that here. We provide the conference center at no cost. We'll provide a breakfast. The only thing we ask is, hey, maybe you want to do lunch. You got to work through our caterer for that, just because there's so many customizable options. where I get the most pride in is taking programs that already exist on military bases and kind of amplifying them or adding that unique touch that comes with being at a major league baseball team or working with folks who work in MLB or for the Nats. So one of those would be our Frontline Forums. It's a professional development program. There's kind of two tracks for that. The first one is we'll take executives from the Nats and we'll talk with leaders from bases, kind of like social emotional learning. So for example, baseball is a sport, and all sports see like a lot of turnover. Every major city has a sports team. People will go for, you know, slightly horizontal or slightly vertical promotion opportunities. In the military, someone might get married, they PCS, they get out of the military. You're supposed to have 5 people in your shop, now you've got 3. So we bring Nats execs to talk about, hey, that happens to us here as well. We're ready to have a team of 7. A few people took other opportunities elsewhere. We're down to 4. How do we do more with less? How do we kind of encourage our workers? How do we avoid burnout? Kind of those broad stroke leadership tips. And then we'll go a little more AFSC, MOS, your rate. We'll bring folks here. We had in December 100 public affairs folks came to talk to our communications team, the video and photography team and social media. Just kind of, here's how we do your job at a pro baseball team. I don't think we are like, here's how we take a picture and it revolutionizes everything. I tell folks it's like 30% informational, 70% fun. But that's one of our programs, Base Hit, High Intensity Interval Training. Once a month during the season, we let service members come PT on the actual field itself.
Wow.
Shout out to our head grounds crewman, John Turnauer, for being an absolute saint who lets us do that. A lot of other baseball teams, the idea of doing something on the playing surface in season is totally taboo. We outfit all of the local military installations with replica Nats jerseys and hats for their intramural softball leagues. We supply a couple thousand service members with those jerseys and caps. And then we'll host we call it the Battle of the Bases tournament, 16 teams over at Joint Base Anacostia Bowling, which is just across the river from Nats Park here in DC. We'll get to 2 finalists from that tournament, and then they play at Nats Park after a Nats game. They play for the Battle of the Bases champion.
On the field.
On the field. So once again, on the actual playing surface, we're the only team in MLB who has a softball game on our primary playing surface in season. We're one of the only folks that do that. Something that we're expanding on, we do a simulcast from Al Udeid Air Base in Qatar. So we worked with MLB to get our 4th of July game. Happens at 11 a.m. here, which is normally about 7, 8 o'clock out in the Deed. And we look for deployed service members from the D.C. area, specifically like the 113th National Guard Wing. What we did last year is we had a colonel throw out the first pitch from the flight line in Al Udeid. And his 3 sons were in the park, and they threw out a first pitch here. So we work with deployed service members and their families to give them this unique bonding opportunity, to give them that experience that they otherwise might not have.
What positives is leadership doing that makes your job easier, and how can sort of other leaders learn from what major sports teams are doing?
I think it's my job, if we're talking like directly to my supervisor, what I tell folks is it's my job to make my boss look good. It's his job to have my back when I don't. What is nice is that anyone getting out of the military or anyone on the civilian side, you're hired for a reason. There is a lot of trust instilled in me, and the fact that my boss has an open door policy and I'm kind of just, you know, float ideas off of him is really appreciated. Overall, I would say to the team ownership, the Lerner family, the fact that they have said, yeah, we want to focus on the military as a whole. In a way, it's not cannibalizing maybe the way some other pro baseball teams focus on the environment, pediatric illness, and the military is also sprinkled in there. The fact that we've dedicated an entire role, an entire almost department to the military certainly makes that much easier.
What do you see other people in, not your position, obviously, because you said there's only 2, but in Comrel doing? Is there anything that you pick up from your peers? Do you guys talk to each other?
Yeah, there's a saying that if you stole from me, you stole twice. Obviously, the kind of amenities we have where, like, our grounds crew is so nice to let us work out on the field, that's something that doesn't get duplicated elsewhere. What I will say is that a lot of folks, when it comes to the military specifically, will look at what the Nats are doing and then say, hey, duplicate that. We actually, our last base hit of 2023 got covered by Stars and Stripes. A few days later, the then XFL, now UFL, was trying to work with Congress to get some money for Army recruiting. And Congress saw what we were doing here with the military and told Dwayne The Rock Johnson, hey, go talk to the Nats and see what they're doing and how to duplicate that. But overall, you just look at programs, I would say, kind of ways to like tinker, make things better. Some of that is listening to peers. Some of that is listening to the stakeholders here in the community. I think the day that we as the Nats say that we are the best at serving the military becomes the day we're not. Kind of always striving to be better. There's always, for example, what I tell folks is because we have such a large number of active duty folks, we really don't do any veteran programming here. Now there's opportunities to find creative ways to get them involved with our military CR effort, but that is kind of on the to-do list. And some of that is looking at teams like Milwaukee. They don't have any active duty bases out there in Wisconsin. How are they reaching those veteran stakeholders, veteran service member stakeholders? It's kind of just looking at that, not being too prideful, I would say, is the thing overall.
Awesome. What skills would you tell junior service members or folks that are just coming into the communication field that they should concentrate on if they want to end up in major sports or in Comrel or just really want to be effective communicators?
Everything. Every time you say no to something, you're saying yes to something else. So how much can you possibly, I guess, digest and absorb? It's great to be the person who's the go point on social media. You know, you're a Facebook guru. That's great. Just remind yourself that you're maybe not getting to do so much community relations or you're not getting to do so much media relations if you're only focused on that. A lot of that comes down to your shop, right? Like it's the needs of the Air Force, Army, Navy, first and foremost. But if you cannot find opportunities within your branch, then you've got to get creative and look for things outside of the shop where maybe it's like volunteering opportunities. A lot of people who want to work in pro sports, I tell them, yes, I get it. It's very cool. You know, we're one of 30 Major League Baseball teams. A local university probably has anywhere from 15 to 30 varsity athletics. Go offer to take photos for them or work, give some like social media copy editing there. Everyone, as a Penn State alumni, everyone when I was there wanted to work for the football team, basketball team, hockey team, wrestling team. Not a lot of folks think about the women's field hockey team. Great opportunities there. Wherever your installation is, I guarantee there's a community college nearby who could use some pro bono weekend volunteer help, capturing content for, you know, the water polo team. So finding ways to round out your resume there and just getting that, once your foot is in the door with sports, that's the key. The hardest part is getting it.
Yeah, like anything else, right?
Exactly, yeah. Kind of a combination of skills and networking. So,
I was just going to say, we hear all the time from the industry luminaries that we talk to that getting out, talking to people, networking is the most vital skill because the old adage of it's who you know really is the key to everything that we do here. Can you kind of talk more about that?
Yeah, so I think I, naive, getting out of the Air Force, going back to Penn State as a 26-year-old undergrad, and when I go back and I do talks with undergrad folks, I ask everyone, what is networking, right? Like, what are your expectations? A lot of people think you're going to kind of like Oliver Twist. I'm going to go up to a Penn State alumni and be like, you went to Penn State. I go to Penn State. Can I have a job? Or someone's going to be like, you were in the Air Force. I was in the Air Force. Here's a job. And that's not how it works at all. My probably most beneficial networking experience was after I got out of the Air Force, I had a desire to do like political communications. I really wanted to work on the Hill. And someone at Penn State connected me with a few folks who were with like FEMA or were working over on Capitol Hill. And someone told me, we're going through, I'm like, what's your advice? And she goes, well, if you want to work in public affairs outside of the government, there's this website called Daybook. It has just a list of public affairs jobs all the way from press secretary down to the person who's like capturing content and doing social media. And that is how I found my first gig at Intel after the Air Force was through this website. Now, had I just been like, oh, this person doesn't have a job for me, you know, I'm going to disregard everything they say. But that job at Intel then opened the door for Disney, which then opened the door for me here at the Nats. So I think it's networking is almost like being realistic about it. I get a lot of folks who will hit me up like, hey, Sean, I work in sports. That's great. I'm like, here are some tips. Here are some things I did. And then I never hear from them again. A lot of folks will like cold LinkedIn message me, email me, and they're like, I saw this posting for this job at the Nats. Here's my resume, and here's like three reasons I'd be a great fit. That's good. I'm happy to look over your resume and all of that, but like, if I vouch for you and then you're a terrible hire or even interviewee, I've like lost all credibility, you know? So I really don't have those kind of spoons to give out. So I think being realistic with your networking and just expanding your network. When you become a veteran, you get a year of LinkedIn premium free. Utilize that. That's a great way to get connected. Every pro sports team has their entire front office listed on the website. So you just search Washington Nationals Community Relations. You'll see me and my three colleagues. And then, you know, send us a message on LinkedIn, send us a request, just see what we're doing. And then within that, you'll see more job postings, things like that. Just putting yourself in the position to get as many opportunities as possible.
What do you think the future of good community relations look like?
Probably more listening, probably more transparency. Everyone wants like corporate social responsibility, right? As companies, I think there's more and more awareness on the, I'll say, strains that come with having a major corporation in your neighborhood. The way a mentor broke it down to me was, we do community relations so we can make deposits in the Goodwill piggy bank. There's gonna come a day where we need to make a withdrawal, and we need to hope that the funds there are enough to cover it. So obviously the good things with, you know, the Nats being in DC, or we bring jobs here, a little bit of pride to the city. But there's also traffic is a big thing on game days around here. The Metro is not 24/7 in DC, so if a game goes extra innings, it's very possible you either leave the game in the 13th inning or you don't catch the subway home. So I think the future overall is recognizing that folks are more aware of like your company's carbon output, right? And we see so many ex Twitter accounts dedicated to tracking CEOs and their flights and their private jets across the world. So I think you need to be proactive in the sense of, we're gonna win hearts and minds in the community. Yes, we're not perfect as an organization, but overall we can, for every time you go, huh, the CEO flies, you know, took a 20-minute private flight and the CO2 that was output is this, we can go, okay, yes, but the reason we do that is so we can have important board meetings, and it gives us the opportunity to do this stuff with the military, with youth baseball, with K-12 education, with the environment, with pediatric illness. So I think it's listening to the stakeholders more and more.
When you have a, you know, obviously you deal, when you're talking about Major League Baseball, you're talking about a ton of people, right? And you're talking about a lot of famous people. You're talking about a lot of people whose lives are very different from ours, right? How do you deal with a negative Comrel issue? If something negative happens and you guys have to get ahead of it, how do you deal with that?
So the people would probably know if there was a negative Comrel issue, which we've been lucky enough to not have any since I've been with the Nats. But who's going to know first and foremost is probably the person who was running that programming. If something, I don't know, if we're on a military base and we had like a nasty incident, maybe with like a spouse or something like that, is a hypothetical that I think of, I would know that that happened first and foremost. So it's not damage control by any means, but then looping in the other departments of, hey, this is an incident we had happen, finding proactive ways to get in front of that. What our communications team, I've heard them say, is they build goodwill with reporters and media so that when something like that happens, they're more likely to give them a call first and be like, hey, I heard about this incident over on Joint Base Andrews, just hoping to, are you aware of this? Now, if I haven't looped in the communications team, first time they're hearing about it. So probably being proactive, obviously taking every step we can to make sure that doesn't happen, right? And that's cultivating environments that are inclusive for everyone, making sure that everyone feels welcomed, whether it's here or when we go to a military installation. But when it comes to a negative event like that, it's kind of the, we have contingencies for these, right? Same thing in the military, you do crisis comms, if you will, like you do those exercises, now it's coming to fruition. So hey, now here's how we get in front of it. Being prepared, I would offer, is essentially the best way to go about that.
Awesome. With that said, now tell me a fun story. Tell me a great time when Comrel worked out really well for you guys.
Yeah, so I just said that, you know, we only focus on these three areas, the military, K-12 education, youth baseball. When I came on the team last season, we had a unique opportunity. The White Sox were coming to town for a 3-game homestand. They have a pitcher on their staff, Liam Hendricks, last season was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, battled back through cancer treatments, rejoined the team, was not an active pitcher in the rotation. But someone from their community relations team, so this is an example of collaboration, was like, hey, Liam has this organization called the Southside SLIDA Society. And what he does is when he goes on the road, he brings kids with pediatric cancer out to the home team's park, meets with them for about an hour, talks about the struggles of having cancer, and then gives them, you know, like $100 essentially to use here at the park. That does not fall within one of our three pillars, but because I had the bandwidth to take that on, we were able to collaborate. We have a corporate partnership with the Inova Hospital System in Virginia, and we were able to bring a kid who was diagnosed with pediatric cancer to the park through that program. He met Liam, his name was Liam as well. The two Liams got to chat for a little while. And then the mom of the child mentioned to me afterwards that, oh, well, he hasn't played baseball since he got diagnosed, but after talking to Liam, the pro baseball player, it's really encouraged him to kind of get back. I know the Nats do summer baseball clinics. We'd love to be involved with that. So that was like a very direct feel-good moment. I was so happy to do it on a large scale. Like, no one knows about it, to be honest. Like, I haven't told that story to anyone.
Right.
So it didn't win us any press. It didn't win us any hearts and minds other than the four family members who were there to talk to this pro baseball player. So that was a lot of fun. That was cool. You know, that hits you in the feels, and that's a good one. When you put in a 14-hour day and maybe the team is 71-91 like we were last year, it's good to point back at that and be like, no, that was cool that we did that.
That's a great story. You know, I think the most unique part and the most vital part of what you just said was that you didn't get any credit for it. No one knows about it. And that's the good stuff, right? That's what we're out here to do, right? We're out here to help those hearts and minds. Even if it's just one person, it doesn't matter if anybody knows about it. You made a difference that day.
Yeah, the impact there is great. And hopefully those four folks, if they weren't already Nats fans, DC is such a unique area. It's very much a transplant city. When you move, one of the only things you bring with you is your fandom. So maybe they weren't Nats fans before. I tell everyone, I'll settle for second place. 30 teams in Major League Baseball. You moved here from Florida and you're a big Marlins fan. If the Nats can be number two, I'm happy with that. Hopefully the Nats are number two for those folks now, or maybe number one if I'm, you know, aiming for the moon. But just kind of, yeah, that's a great example, I think, of something under the radar, but it mattered.
It's awesome. What last quick tip would you give to anybody who's looking to be successful in media, communications, even in the service? What would you say?
Be a sponge overall. Look to mentors. Never stop learning. There's a lot of stuff we've all heard before where, you know, take care of your body first, but mental health, super important, right? If the car is on fire, you don't want to be worried about changing the tires, right? So rule number one is look out for number one first is what I tell folks. So be self-aware, know when to ask for help. That was my big thing at Penn State. I flunked out because I didn't know when to ask for help. When I got in the military, I knew a little more how to ask for help. When I went back to Penn State after the military, I knew when to ask for help. And I think that's translated now overall. So I would say that. I would say listen to the Dinfos Way, subscribe to the podcast, of course, probably the number one tip.
I didn't tell them to do that, folks.
Did not. And a great tip is to be on the lookout for Nats tickets here in D.C., our branch days, Army, Air Force, Navy, Marine, Coast Guard, Space Force. We're always looking to kind of give folks at any of the local installations, if they want a media credential, come out, build their sports portfolio. Be happy to let them get some kind of pregame, either, you know, B-roll, video package, or photos, anything like that. And then kind of just be a good dude, gender-neutral dude overall, I would say. Be a good person, and that'll probably set you up for success the most.
I love that. Sean, thanks so much for joining us today. I can't tell you how much I appreciated it. You gave us a lot of really great information. I think not only our students, but any of other members of our audience who are interested are going to take a lot of stuff from that. So, again, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, and go Nats.
Go Nats.